Hello everyone, Dave Levinsky here from Growth Inc., and I'm really excited today to be able to interview Bambi Francisco. Bambi is the co-founder and CEO of Vader TV. Vader allows emerging companies to showcase and market themselves to investors, partners, and others, and share their news. And Bambi has also raised two rounds of outside capital for Vader TV, totaling just over $1.6 million. Before Vader, Bambi was a columnist and correspondent at Dow Jones Market Watch, where she covered internet trends and investments across the public and private sectors. And I'm really excited to speak with Bambi today about her own entrepreneurial experiences, as well as advice she has for entrepreneurs and business owners who are looking to raise capital. So Bambi, thanks again for taking the time to speak with me today.
Well, thank you for having me on your show.
Excellent. So let's start at the beginning if we can, Bambi. Can you tell us a little bit about the inspiration you had for Vader TV?
Yeah, well, quite simply, I was a columnist and correspondent at Dow Jones, and what I found was that I was bombarded with a lot of pitches because I was a journalist covering startups, and so I'd get thousands of emails in a year, many in a day, and so for every 100 pitches, I would probably have time to do one story. But what I wanted to do was I wanted to create a platform where all of the 99 that I would overlook would be able to find some exposure without me. And so I started getting people to video pitches and put them up on the existing video platforms at the time, YouTube and Grouper. And went to talk to my friend Peter Thiel, who is a co-founder of PayPal and also runs a hedge fund now, pretty well known in Silicon Valley, and I said, hey, Peter, I have these people pitching their ideas in video, and it's really interesting because they're on a platform, and people are, I can tell whether they're, I should take a look at them because I can tell based on how many views they're getting, and I said, this is an interesting way to vet companies. Peter thought it would be a great idea to create a company, and it would be an interesting way to vet companies to invest in. And so that's how Vader, a year later, so about June of 2007, it launched as an actual company.
Hey, Bambi, just, you know, the audio cut out for 1 second. It's a little soft now as well.
Oh, okay.
That's better.
Is it better now or not? Okay, all right.
It's much better now. So what I had heard was that you talked to Peter, and he told him about it, and it was a very interesting way for him and others to view these companies as potential investment opportunities.
Well, for me, yes. For me, I used it. I thought it was a good vetting tool to find companies to write about as a journalist. For him, he thought this was a good way to find companies to invest in. And so Vader launched in June 2007 as a place, as a platform for startups to post a video pitch. And really, it was quite simply that. It was just to post a video of themselves pitching, mostly for investments. And it's changed a lot since then. In 2 years, it's certainly become much more than just a platform for pitching.
Can you talk about what it's become now?
And I can tell you the lessons I've learned as why it's become different today. Thousands of or tens of thousands of entrepreneurs on the site, tens of thousands of thousands of companies on the site using their Vader profile as a way to market and promote themselves and also to create business development relationships. So while in 2007 we started as a place to post a pitch to invest yourself, an investment pitch, it's evolved to be a service that goes along with you throughout the lifetime of your company as a private company. Because what we found was that, you know, people were posting pitches, video pitches, and then they'd leave. I mean, how often do you post a video pitch? How often do you even post a video update? And so what we needed to do was we needed to make the profile, because the videos lived in the context of a profile, what we needed to do was make it more useful to an entrepreneur. So today, we took a survey, and at 47% of our core users are using the profile as a way to promote and market themselves. 41% use it for business development purposes, and the rest use it for investment purposes. So it's not, because when you're a private company, it's not just about pitching for dollars. It's about pitching to create partnerships to generate revenue. which are another form of investment dollars, probably a better form of investment dollars, would
sure.
be finding customers. And so people now are using it, as a way, really, just as a networking platform to get exposure. And we're really happy with that because it's far more active and it's far more useful. So, and we do have lots of investors on the site, and now we have investors coming on the site because they are looking for companies who aren't just pitching for dollars, but really just networking to really build their company. And I think that's more attractive to investors. And now we have, 700 investors on the platform.
Well, that's great.
I mean, when we started, I think when we launched in June of 2007, I believe we had about 150 people on the site. So it's grown a lot. I mean, it's still a small community. I mean, I put together estimates. I believe there's maybe 3 million entrepreneurs in the country. That's still a really small percentage, obviously, of the population. Maybe 6 million around the world. So it's fairly small. So we're not going for a big, big market.
Got it. And how do you – I'm sorry, keep going.
Go ahead.
I was going to say, like, from a networking platform perspective, obviously there are much larger, you know, networks out there for entrepreneurs to meet and greet. Now, is the one of the core advantages that you are such a niche network that there are, as a percentage of members, there are so many more investors and so many other emerging companies? Is that where the real value lies?
The value lies in us being focused on being niche and vertical and servicing the entrepreneurs. Is that what you're asking? Why our platform and our venue is different from, say, a broader social network? I mean,
exactly.
everything we do is about entrepreneurship. Mm-hmm. You know, whether even it's in the newsroom where we have 100 plus contributors, I believe you're one of the contributors now, so thank you. But we have a number of CEOs and VCs and consultants who want to be thought leaders. And so mm-hmm. it makes a lot of sense that they have a platform to be able to publish stories to a relevant community of entrepreneurs. And we look at, say, you know, now we have the microblogging feature on our, you know, on the company profiles. We're turning that on slowly. We launched it in around Christmas time with private beta users, and just mm-hmm. last week we launched it to the public. So now we're slowly rolling that out where people can turn that on. And what we've done with that is really it's just a microblogging feature where you can send short messages on your profile. And a number of people love that. And, you know, those posts are actually syndicated to Twitter. And so you can reach out to the Twitter community. Now, the reason I bring that up is because it's, you know, when you look at Vayner, it's almost like going to a high-tech growth conference versus going to a concert on Twitter. So on Twitter, you blast out a post, and sure, you'll get millions and millions of people. It's like blasting out something, you know, at a concert and saying, hey, I just hired a new biz dev guy, or hey, I just launched an iPhone app, and nobody really cares. Whereas if you said that on Vayner, it's very relevant, and you'll get more people who care and who will interact with you. And so I think that's, you know, you don't want to get lost in the big social networks. What you want to do is you want to find relevant communities to help you, because you know it's tough as a startup. You know, there's really no place for a startup where you can actually, you know, unless you go to conferences, and those are definitely still in demand, I think even more demand, but you still need to create, you know, your own communities to build your business, and that's what we're trying to do. And I think that's why, LinkedIn and Reid Hoffman will say, like, we're all for entrepreneurs. But, you know, at the end of the day, it's entrepreneurs and everybody else. You know, so many other professionals on that site. We're really trying to just focus on high-tech entrepreneurs, not just any entrepreneur either. It's high-tech, high-growth company entrepreneurs. So, maybe we'll expand beyond that. But for now, we want to be able to make sure that we're servicing them.
Got it. Yeah, so the next question I had written down, which was, the sectors that you're serving, so it's high tech, high growth companies that really fit in the venture capital profile, I would guess.
Yeah, they would definitely be, because those are the ones we believe that people want to aspire to become. So we're not saying that nobody wants to, you know, be a franchisee, you know, owner, and those aren't the people we want to aspire to. But those aren't on the cutting edge So what we want to do is we want to follow and identify companies and entrepreneurs who are really being disruptive. That doesn't mean we're going to close ourselves off to everybody else, but we really want to show, you know, I guess for lack of a better word, you know, where the action is happening, you know, what's really sexy, what's really what you want to aspire to be. It's almost like, you know, the Golf Channel, where you're going to show Tiger Woods all the time and not just anybody who's playing golf. And if, you know, he wanted, I want to show entrepreneurs, like as the hundreds of entrepreneurs you've seen that I've interviewed, like the Slide CEO, Zynga CEO, Twitter CEO, all of these CEOs who really, really made it, had an impact, I want to share their stories. And
right.
I think that's, you know, and it's, that, you know, they tend to be in the high-tech industry. So social media, digital media, social networks, mobile, clean tech, those are the areas that, you know, I'm really interested in. I have, you know, knowledge in. So those are the areas we're attacking right now.
Got it. Now, just a quick point. You mentioned the Zynga CEO interview. Just for everyone listening, I watched that interview. I thought he was brilliant, and it was really some great insight. So I encourage everyone to watch some of these interviews because there's a lot of great value and insight that you'll gain from that. And the next question I have has to do with using Vader as an entrepreneur. And I know that with a lot of social networks and networking in general, you just can't take. You have to give a little bit. So how does an entrepreneur that's looking for capital or looking for, you know, revenues or partners, how do they go on and become a part of Vader without being a me person and being obnoxious and, you know, not being part of the community?
Well, I think the best examples are those who've been in our private beta. What they've done is they've created their profiles and they've turned on the microblogging. And they're posting, and today anybody can turn on the microblogging. Before it was private. Today anyone can turn on the microblogging, but you have to invite 25 followers first. Because the whole idea is you want to sort of give back to the community. You invite relevant people. Other people are inviting relevant people, and hopefully everybody's going to gain some followers. So that's pretty simple. So you invite 25 new people to the community. And
so there's 25 people that are not members already?
Not members. Well, no. You can invite people who, you just have to get 25 followers. So
okay,
we just want
followers.
You to have followers. So we have this concept of followers. So if you look at some of our private beta users like Cosmic, they have nearly 900 followers in several months. And the reason they have that many followers is because everybody's inviting people. And Cosmic is also, you know, probably reaching out to people in the community. We have tens of thousands of people in our community now, so they're probably reaching out and saying, follow my company. Are you interested here? It's almost like giving out a business card. Here, follow me, you know?
Okay, got it.
And so once you get 25 followers, and they don't have to be new to Vader, they just have to be showing that they're interested in your company.
Okay.
Then the microblogging short messaging features turn on, much like Twitter. And what you do is you just post, you know, just say, hey, I am going to have a meeting with investors. Oh, I just launched a new UI. I just launched a new product. Hey, you know, I'm going to be in Santa Monica. I'm going to be in Digital Hollywood. I'm attending here. So if you want to meet me, let me know. I mean, they're using it as a very business context that you couldn't have to, for those out there who are listening who are not familiar with what's happening, I mean, I would highly recommend that you follow companies and you can see how they're using it. So when you do this, so say Cosmic or Wet Paint or Zynga or Buddy Media are starting to post these microblogs, what happens is that Vader will recommend that other users follow the company. So if you're a very active user on your profile, we will recommend that Vader users and Vader new users follow your company. That's why Cosmic ended up with, you know, nearly 900 in several months, because we were pushing their profile and recommending others to follow them. And so for them, it's great. And it's not just Cosmic. There's lots of others who have, you know, over 500 users because we're pushing our user base. Over 40% of the companies now on Vader, 40% of the user base now follow companies. And so that means there's more opportunity for us to keep recommending new companies. So for a startup there who wants to get followers and exposure for free, because all of this is for free, I would say create a profile and start, you know, blogging, microblogging, because we actually, because with that microblogging, we actually recommend your company for others to follow. The other way, too, is through the newsroom, where we have a lot of CEOs who have become thought leaders. And so, you know, they're every so often, they're out there, you know, every couple of weeks, they're posting a column. We distribute it in our newsroom. We distribute it in our newsletters. So that's another way, for free, they can market themselves, as opposed to, because I think that's a big trend, right, where you have a lot of CEOs, a lot of consultants who are, you know, who can reach out to the audience themselves and be thought leaders, and that's a form of marketing as well. So that's something that I would encourage entrepreneurs to do. If they like to write, if they have opinions, you know, use this as a platform, because later our newsrooms articles get distributed to Google News, Thomson Reuters. We're soon going to be cutting deals with a few other outlets that are very relevant that I can't mention today. But, you know, that's one way you can get a big distribution as opposed to just having your own blog.
We're trying to
help entrepreneurs get their message and get their story out, and whether it's them writing internally, you know, writing on their profile or writing a thoughtful piece about their sector.
Got it. I'm sorry, you want to finish up that thought?
I hope that helps. I would also say that if you don't have a company, and if you're an investor, or if you're just a service provider or somebody that doesn't have an actual company, I would say you can get very active on the site as well just by following companies and just interacting with people on the site.
Understood. So for the entrepreneur that wants to specifically look for investors, they should get the account, they start microblogging, they publish to the newsroom, and in doing so, you know, that I'm hearing that they're going to attract followers, and which will include investors as well. Is that correct? And or is there anything else specifically you have to do if you're looking for investors?
No, I mean, I think you can go directly to investors, of course, but, you know, the things in the you know, online don't change much from what happens offline. What happens offline is that you really need to be recommended. You really need to be referred to, right, for anybody, particularly angel investors. They want references. And so what I'm saying is create your own buzz around yourself. And, you know, I think that's a better way to be in front of an investor as opposed to just pinging them and say, you know, it's almost like cold calling and sending a, you know, an email. It's just like any social network you use. If you are on LinkedIn, if you are on Facebook, or even if you are on those entrepreneur networks like Raise Capital, Fund Finder, Genesis Exchange, all of those where you can reach out to an investor, cold calling just doesn't work. And so we, you know, I know investors on Vayner are getting pinged, and that works, but I wouldn't be sending a ton of emails, or you will be sort of abusing the system, or, you know, I mean, it's just like you in the offline world, you know, nobody's going to take your call again. So what you need to do is create your own, use the platform as a way to create exposure around yourself. I'll tell you one company, Liquid Scenarios, they are so active that they are so in my face every day, but not pinging me saying, hey, I want this, I want that. They're just actively using the site, and they're gaining a following. And every time I see they're gaining a following, I'm thinking, oh, you know, they're really – or Watkins is another one. They are so actively just working, and it's so evident that they're working, because I could see it in their microblogs, I could see it in their videos, that, you know, to me, that's more – I will take a call with them as opposed to somebody who's just pinging me and asking me to sit down with me and can they show me your company. I mean, the whole platform is designed to, like, show me your company, right? So
it's a good point. I'm sorry. I was going to say that's a really good point, because I've done a lot of interviews with angel investors and venture capitalists, and there's sort of that six-month rule that they usually they like to know you or have been referred to, and a lot of them like to know you personally for 6 months to see your progress. And I guess what you're with these companies that you're mentioning there, you know, it probably takes them a few months for you to keep seeing them in front of you, not pinging you, as you said, but, you know, posting and showing you progress. Hey, we did this. Hey, we did that. It builds a lot of credibility and trust. And so after a few months of doing that, there is that credibility and trust to actually make investment, I would think.
Oh, yeah, that's definitely the way, because you can't control what an angel investor is going to want, but you can mm-hmm. control your own progress and your own activity. So I would, ultimately, though, it comes down to what angel investors want is they want progress mm-hmm. more than anything. They just want to see, you know, if you cold call them and you say, like, hey, I've got all these numbers and these are my metrics, you know, hey, you may catch someone's attention. I'm not saying that that's not the way to go, but I'd say that for the most part, they will see that by seeing your posts, right? I've seen a number of announcements on the, you know, people are announcing stuff on their profile saying, oh, we just launched this product. Oh, we mm-hmm. just hit this milestone. Oh, you know, and for me, what you want is the angel investors to reach out to you.
Right.
And say, hey, I've been watching your progress and it looks great. Then that's I've had investors approach me because they've followed what we've been doing on Vader. I haven't reached out to them. There's sometimes when I have reached out to them, but mm-hmm. many times they're reaching out because they see the progress. Because at the end of the day, it's all about your product and your progress.
God, that's such an incredibly important point. Is that if you're an entrepreneur looking for capital, the power changes so much when the investors are seeking you out versus when you're just one of thousands or if not more of others saying, hey, please fund me. And I think it's a great point that Vader allows you to create some buzz in the community so that investors can very easily follow you and then contact you. It also saves you, I'm sure, a ton of time versus making outbound, you know, contact to X number of investors when a certain number of investors contact you. It's just a much better fundamental or dynamic.
Yeah, I mean, at the end of the day, what you want them to know is what do you do when you go see an investor anyway? You need to give them updates, right? I mean, you're not just going to go to them and say, like, hey, we started this company and, you know, we need money. If you started this company and here are our metrics or here's our goals and here's what we've reached, here's our milestones we've reached. And so what I've been doing now is following companies and seeing that they've hit milestones because of their posts on the site. And what's great about that is that a lot of these companies would never have had the platform to do that in front of people who cared. I mean, sometimes, you know, you're in the old days, you launched an application or you signed on a new customer, and what did you do? You tried to reach out to a tech reporter and say, hey, please give us exposure and cover this. And now there's multiple ways where you can get that message out, and Vader is just one way. I mean, you could do it on Twitter, but again, if you post it on Vader, it goes directly to Twitter. And so there's right now it's just another way to get your story out to anybody and not just, you know, that person who used to be the gatekeeper, that was the journalist, right, who got your story in front of everybody else. You can do your own. It may not – you know, maybe you get a small audience, but at least it's an audience. At least it's an audience, and at least it can be bigger. So it's just you need to take more control of, you know, your messaging and branding. And again, I just look at the companies on the site who have been actively using it and who've been actively getting followers. And, you know, for them, it's like, wow, this is a great way not just to reach out to investors, but by the way, it would be because those people that end up following – becoming followers have relationships with investors, and those investors will eventually be, and they will, you know, and it goes on and on and on. So you need to start with a group of followers, and then, you know, eventually they're going to spread the word to other people to make recommendations that they should follow the company, your company. So I would be actively using the site just to talk about your progress, not to talk about that you need money, but to talk about your company, create awareness, and then that awareness starts reaching out to the investors. And then, you know, if you have 500 followers, you can, like, ping an investor on Vader, and he'd probably be like, wow, you have 500 followers. I'll probably talk to you, as opposed to I have no followers, and I don't really know anyone on the site, and I don't, you know, you don't really have much to say, right?
Got it.
So, I mean, unless you're a Zynga, which has already raised like $40 million, but
right.
Most companies aren't Zynga on Vader.
Got it. I like two things you're saying. Is one is that credibility factor. You know, the fact that you have X number or 400, 500 followers automatically gives you credibility amongst investors, which is great. And the second thing is that sort of that dual strategy, which is that even if you have connections with other companies, it's worthwhile. You don't only have to have connections with investors. And I recently interviewed Ryan Alice, who is the CEO of iContact, and he raised, you know, $5 million in venture capital when he was only 22 years old, which is a pretty incredible story. And the way he did that is that he sought out the CEOs of other companies that had raised capital. He befriended them and used those relationships to get introductions. And what you're talking is a very similar thing, which is that find other companies that may have gotten funded or may know other people, and that's how you sort of network successfully into raising capital.
Yeah, I mean, I think what sounds like what he was saying is that he found relevant companies or relevant CEOs who had relevant investors and investors who understood his space.
Exactly.
Investors who had the same investment philosophy. And so, yeah, capital is very different. Money is not, you know, the same from... It's very, very important that you understand who you take the capital from, and it shouldn't just be from anyone. And so, you know, and so when you are pitching an investor, you better know a lot about them and why you want them to be part of your venture. Is it because they have connections? Is it because they have domain expertise? And it shouldn't just be because they have capital. Because that's
right.
You're going to run into some problems down the road if that investor has any control of your company at all, and you guys have different investment philosophies, different strategies, or that investor basically is dead weight and has no, you know, has control but can't help you with your company at all because he has no idea what's going on. And so I think it really is important to look at companies and say, like for Vader, you know, we're social network, we're digital media. Look at angel investors or look at VCs who have expertise in those areas and go to them, because it is a relationship. And I'm sure you've heard that before. And I've certainly, after 2 years, I've understood that it is so much of a relationship, because you're with these guys pretty much, you know, I mean, you're talking to them once a month, once every 2 months, and you rely on them for a lot, either, you know, for networking, you know, for relationships, to open doors. And if you have a bunch of dead weight investors who you just took money from, they're not going to be able to help you. And that's sad, because you gave them equity in your company. And for what? For money? Well, great. But, you know, the money only gets you so far. It's the relationships and it's the knowledge that the investors bring that are really, really helpful, at least I find.
Totally agree. Can you sort of move the conversation more towards the capital that Vader has raised based on that, in terms of, you know, when you first went out, I believe it was you raised your initial round in March of 2007. What was the status of Vader at that point? You know, obviously it wasn't where it is today. You know, what did you have to show at that point?
Nothing, really. We had,
yeah.
We didn't have a platform. We had a very, very bad platform with some videos. I believe we had about 50 at the time. 50 videos, and that was it. Video, and if you went on the site, it crashed because it really wasn't. It was created by somebody who built it for free, because, again, I had these videos on YouTube and Grouper, and I thought, well, I want them on my own platform. So we ended up creating this really bad platform just to put it was like a placeholder. But we had an idea. I had an idea, and I had a concept. And that was, and again, when I talked to Peter Thiel, you know, it was one of those napkin stage type environments where I said, hey, Peter, you know, I've got this thing. And he said, I want to invest. And it wasn't a company. So I like to say I was an accidental entrepreneur. It wasn't really, there really wasn't anything, but we had an idea that there could be something. And so I did go around to Peter. Peter was the very first one. The next person who came on was Richard Rosenblatt, chairman of MySpace. And these are people that I knew, I had relationships with. I'd say in hindsight that they probably invested more in my relationship with them than they did in the concept. Like they invested because they thought that I had already had a success and that this was an interesting enough idea that a little money could probably go a long way. And so they were in. I mean, Richard was just like, you know, I'm in. And he got all of his friends, the shopping.com CEO. Now, that said, we had to go around to, I got the founder of Friendseed and a couple of the early executives at Google, early employees. And I did have to pitch them and sit down with them and talk about the idea. It was very much not the idea it is today. But there was an idea that it would be an entrepreneur community and we would be bringing entrepreneurs and investors together and there would be some news component and competition component that would drive the users and registration. And so they invested really without the company launching because the company really launched in June 2007. And so I talked to VCs as well because I knew them. And, of course, they just thought, wow, you know, this was such a tiny company, and I'm a journalist. What do I know? And so I got rejected. And Peter will tell you, Peter was the one who told me, Bambi, you got to speak to 100 people, and then you'll get a few. So I spoke to probably 50 people and, you know, went out there and showed them the site, which wasn't really working, had 50 videos, no traction, and, you know, had a terrible PowerPoint. And here I didn't know what I wanted to raise. And I had a business model that went out 18 months, which is hilarious, which I found out later because you need a business model that at least goes out 5 years. And I didn't really have the right team in place and to really get a lot of money. So we raised angel investing, angel funds. But what was good about the angel funds, the money that I raised was that they were from very relevant people and people who actually could – help me, help grow the business, and give me lots of feedback. My investors were definitely my partners in the first year, 2007. It's very important.
So, what are some of the value you mentioned with partners with investors are partners, and they're a lot more than money. And you mentioned opening doors. Maybe you can talk about some of the things that they've been able to do for you besides the capital they've brought to the table.
Yeah, so very early on, we had an acquisition offer, and I had no idea how to do that. I didn't even want to, so I brought Peter Thiel with me. We flew to New York, and I said, you have to sit down. He had sold PayPal to eBay, and I said, you know, the company had barely launched, and I said, you know, maybe you should sit down in this meeting with me. So I had him involved. I had Richard Rosenblatt involved a lot with the contracts and also opening doors to the media world because, again, we had a new site. So they opened doors to a lot of the people in media. Even though I had a lot of those relationships myself, they were very helpful in doing that. And then today, now, they are very, very helpful in just listening to, you know, what I do is we've got like 15 investors. What I try to do is whoever, you know, is available and who has time to listen to where Vader is, I try to send them the deck and I try to talk to them and ask them for advice. Richard Rosenblatt is probably the best person in terms of availability, and throughout the last couple of years, he's just always available. At least every 2 months, Richard understands where Vader's going, and he gives me his feedback on, oh, yeah, you should do this, you should do that. Just, making recommendations and being there to support me. So, and he's very relevant, right, because he's overseeing demand media. And that's all about social networking and content, user-generated content. So that's been helpful. There are a number of other investors who came along the way, a handful of them. And there's really not much they can offer in terms of strategy or in terms of opening doors. And that's why I said money is really important in terms of who you get that money from, because they need to be, they need to understand. They need to have the big picture so they won't steer you in the wrong way. Because investors, once you get a number of them, they will all have different strategies. I have just realized that after talking to all of them, it's like, oh, you can do this. And they kind of all have different visions. Mm-hmm. And you have to make sure that, you know, you've got the few there that are really, really, that really get it and are there to listen to you and there to give you advice and also there to give you recommendations. For instance, like Richard, I was meeting with a VC, and I said, hey, Richard, I'm meeting with this guy. I know you're meeting with him. You know, just put in a good word. And
right.
That type of thing is that they have those relationships that are relevant to Vader. And so, and that helps, that continues, that helps Vader going forward. I hope that makes some sense.
It makes a ton of sense. It's really about the relationships and you're talking about leveraging, you know, a lot of people that are able to be angel investors do have a lot of knowledge and relationships that you want to leverage and you definitely want to go after the right investors, obviously, that makes sense for your venture. Can you talk a little bit about, you raised that first round of capital and then you raised about the same amount of capital less than a year later. And looking back on it, you know, why did you raise it in two parts? Looking back on it, would you have rather raised it in one round because it did take a lot of time to raise the second round? And what advice do you have based on that?
Well, people typically say that if you can get all the money up front or get the most money as you can up front, but I have to say that I was glad that I did it in two parts. The second time wasn't that difficult, actually. It was a lot faster. I think because we had more traction, and it was just, it didn't take much time at all. So what I liked about doing it in two tranches is that if I took it all at once, we would have burned through that money so quickly. And what I've learned as an entrepreneur running this company, I've learned that if you have a lot of money, you can make some terrible, terrible mistakes, like blowing through it really quickly without and applying it to areas that you really don't need to apply it to. I think when you don't have as much money and you start it as a very low budget thing and it gains traction on its own, I think that's much better than getting tons of money and then just blowing it on marketing or blowing it on just expenses, superfluous expenses, which a lot of them become, but you don't realize it until later. And I am glad that that money didn't come by until a year later because I learned a lot in that first year. I learned a lot about what the product is. And my big lesson is, and there's many, but the product is the marketing. I think that you don't start off putting tons of marketing behind a product. You let the product speak for itself. And you spend as little as possible on, you know, trying to go out there and advertising and marketing. Not that we did a lot of that, but we did some. And that was wrong. I mean, this is, especially for a consumer web company, you should let the product, that all the marketing efforts should be built into the product. We also had a huge team. We also had a huge team outside of the U.S. We outsourced everything. We're spending tons of money, and it was really slow. It was really slow. So I would never have a startup when you're trying to iterate quickly, have your development team outside the U.S. We have one person now who's much better than the six people we had outside the U.S. He iterates quite faster than everybody else. Now, you know, for one, we actually have a better idea of where we want to go. But two, it's also when I have a vision, I can mention it to him and he can implement it. Whereas before, I had a vision, I said to my CTO would say somebody else, and he would tell it to somebody else. So, I mean, we spent 75% of the money on admin than development. And so I would say to anybody, unless they know where they're going to apply that money, I would say take the money in. If you can take the money in, but I would try to spend as little as possible so you have a clear game plan because you can spend. I've seen it often. You know, with Vader, you know, we're not profitable yet, and so it's a concern. You always want, you look back and say, wow, I shouldn't have spent that. So I'm very much of the, so I'm glad that we did it in two tranches. And I think that people should try to see what they can build, you know, on a lot less. Plus, the hurdle is a lot less. You know, fortunately for me, we didn't raise $5 million. So my hurdle to give back to my investors isn't really that much relative to a lot of other companies raising multi-million dollar rounds, ours isn't that big of a hurdle. And so that's a lot less pressure on me. So I think mostly it's just a learning experience. You're constantly going to be learning throughout, you know, whether you have the right team, whether you have the right product, and you just don't want to build up ahead of the product and ahead of the team that the right team. You need to have the right team, and it's so critical and so important to have the right team, and it's critical and important to make the right decisions to shape that team, meaning let people go. Bring in, you know, let your friends go, bring in somebody who actually matters.
Right.
And there's a lot of that happens at a startup because you're hiring your friends, right? Those are the people you know, and you're like, oh, I need bodies, and okay, I think you're good at this. Okay, come on. And but then at the end of the day, they're really not the right people.
That's probably a very tough thing as an entrepreneur to have to fire friends. Is that something you had to go through?
I did, you know, let go of one of my partners, and I've let go some people and brought in others, yes. And it is very tough, and I didn't really want to do it in the beginning, but I realized that in order to shape the team, there are certain people who are super, super smart, super qualified, not the right fit. Either they were too expensive, or either they didn't work in the pace that a startup needs. Remember, startup is you're not working in a big company. You're holding an oar and you're rowing. Mm-hmm. So, you know, if you've been a manager someplace else and you're used to having a lot of people doing things for you, that's not going to fit. You know, if you're used to a comfortable, steady pace, that's not, you know, entrepreneurs are going one direction one day, going the other direction the other day. You know, it's because it's fluid. You're experimenting, you're trying, kind of move on, try different things. And so it's a very different mindset from somebody who hasn't worked in the startup world. And so you have to find those people. And sometimes they're not the original people you started with.
Agreed. So definitely that the fit thing is key, particularly when you're working with people, long hours, and the success is ultimately based on the people working in it. Baby, I know you have to go in a minute, so I have one final question for you if you can. Which is what other advice do you have for entrepreneurs, you know, seeking capital for their businesses?
I see that if they have I'd say that I started off my company as a project. It was a side project of mine. And then I saw demand. I would say if you can keep it as a side project and spend some time on it, maybe get some friends and family money involved, and get it to a point where you could actually make maybe real money, like real customers, then mm-hmm. I think that's one of the ways you can go if you don't know any investors. But I think that's the direction I would go. I would definitely, again, start it as a side project. If you listen to the Zynga, Mark Pincus' interview, he will also tell you that he started Tribe and he started Zynga as a side project. I think mm-hmm. if you talk to, like, Mark Zuckerberg didn't go out there and get his money until he penetrated Harvard. And Mark Zuckerberg basically, it cost him $80 a month to run his servers. And so he went out and he got advertisers to pay for the $85 a month. So you're,
right.
You know, if you have a small platform, such a consumer web platform, you can find customers. They're your best source of venture investment capital. Because they don't know equity in there. And at the end of the day, ultimately, you want to create a business, right? You want to create a business. So you may as well start sooner. That's the way I would do it. If you have, if you have an ability to get on, you know, sites like Vayner, and network with people, go to conferences, I would do that as well. If I were to start another business again, it's going to be a side project, and I'm going to find my customers before I go out there and try to raise some money. I'm going to wait till somebody comes to me and say, I want to put some money in. I'm not going to be knocking on doors.
Got it. Yeah, that's a very, very good point. If any entrepreneur can do that, that will save a lot of time and allow them to be more successful. Bammy, I really appreciate your time. Thank you so much. And once again, everyone, Vayner TV, it's just Vayner, V-A-T-E-R tor.tv, and I will post a link along with this interview so that people can get to your site very quickly. Bambi, thanks again for your time. I really appreciate it.
Thanks for having me.